Peter Fitzsimons is a prolific writer of history with 27 books published, but he stresses he is not a historian in the traditional sense, saying that if he walked into a room of historians, they would hold their noses. However, Peter's popularity for books on Eureka, Gallipoli, Kokoda, Charles Kingsford Smith, Ned Kelly, and the Antarctic explorers Scott Shackleton and Amundsen are bestsellers. He talks to Graham about his life's work, his heroes, a new book, and the Antarctic trip he's hosting for Chimu Adventures this year.
It's great to welcome to Travel Writers Radio this afternoon Peter Fitzsimons. Peter's a journo, like me, but he's written an awful lot of books and he's played competitive and world-class rugby. Oh, you've married a beautiful woman who's now a television star in her own right. There's not much you haven't done, Peter.
I'm the president of the Australian Men Punching Well Above Their Weight Club, and delighted to be so.
Fantastic. Peter, the reason we're talking to you today is because one of your books was about Sir Douglas Mawson, and that's struck the interest of the people who take folks like us in ships down to the Antarctic. And you're going down to be you're not leading it, but you're commentating, aren't you? Is that the deal?
That's a very good question. I'm on the ship, and I think I'll be doing some lectures on Douglas Mawson and basically that whole thing of the Icemen of the Heroic Age. I mean, of all the trips I've been on, all parts of the planet I've ever been to, I mean, Antarctica is staggering. And the trip down, we went down on, about 2011, took the family down. I was writing the book, maybe it was late 2010, early 2011. And to go to Antarctica, the first time I'd got an idea of what our planet used to be like before we built, you know, shopping malls and roads. And it's just teeming with life. Just, you know, when you get to Antarctica, the edges of Antarctica, the penguins, the fish, the birds, the whales, and just teeming everywhere. And we stopped, I think it's Macquarie Island on the way down. And again, you just look at it and you go, well, I just can't believe there's a part of the planet that is this bountiful in life. And then when we got to Mawson's Hut, we were very lucky to be able to get into Commonwealth Bay on the day that we approached and actually made the landing at Mawson's Hut, which is what interested me for the writing of my book. And I was just stunned because I looked at it and I thought, well, I can believe that men in 1911 could, you know, land in Antarctica, having come down in a fairly primitive ship, and I could believe they'd have the materials and they'd build a hut. But it is unbelievable. Mawson's Hut is at the bottom of a very long slope. So for those of your listeners who know Sydney and surrounds and the Illawarra, it's like the Bulleye Pass. It's like Mawson's Hut is down on the coast, and you've got this mountain sort of going up, this slope going up, and you look up that slope, and you think, well, how would it be to venture up that slope and go the other side and then head out? I mean, these guys, in the case of Scott of the Antarctic, in the case of Roald Amundsen, going out to the South Pole, I think from memory, 700 or 800 kilometres, treading where no one had ever trod before. Mawson kept to the coast. He was much more the scientist than a flag planter. But the courage of those men, their experiences, the richness of their experiences, and the extraordinary story of Mawson, of course, it really, it's a stunning yarn, if I do say so myself.
So it's probably the equivalent of going to the moon, would you say?
Well, interesting you should raise that, because the story that I loved out of Antarctica was that in 1895, mankind knew more about what was on the surface of the moon than they did about Antarctica. Nobody before 1895 had even set foot on Antarctica. Captain Cook, I think it was in 1773 from memory, had got within cooee of Antarctica, couldn't get to it because of the icebergs. But his report back to Admiralty was, look, even if there's a land there's nothing worth gathering because it's all going to be frozen, but there's not going to be any people there. There won't be any riches there. It'll just be ice. And, you know, so that's the story with Antarctica. But you say that, like, just on a tangential subject, I've just finished writing the book of Burke and Wills. We're just not far away from getting it up to proof stage.
Oh, okay, that's great. But I was going to ask you what was next.
Burke and Wills.
Is that another great discovery, or is it a big furphy? How do you perceive them?
The the thing about Burke and Wills, of all the stories in Burke and Wills, the thing that amazes me, I mean, people just have an image of Burke and Wills dying in the desert, you know. And in fact, in all of their trip to the Gulf, there was only one day they were short of water. Water was not the issue. Food was the issue.
Right.
And the fact that they didn't appreciate the indigenous culture when they got to Cooper's Creek. I mean, for the Aborigines of Cooper's Creek back in the 1860s, seeing these guys dying of starvation was like you or I seeing a couple of people dying between aisles 4 and 5 of Woolworths. For the indigenous people, there was so much food at Cooper's Creek, they just didn't know what to do with it all. And the guy that goes out to find Burke and Wills, Alfred Howitt, he's a serious explorer who knows what he's doing. And with his explorers, they find the one surviving member of Burke and Wills, John King, and they camp that night by the waterhole where Burke and Wills, not far from where Burke and Wills died. And Howitt says, guys, throw some lines in. Let's see if we can get some fish. In the next 3 hours, they pulled out 112 pounds of fish.
Wow.
You know, by the billabong. It's a fascinating, fascinating story. But to finish the point, of those stories of Burke and Wills, something that just stunned me about Wills was a trained astronomer. That was his whole background. And in late December, up in far north Queensland, as they're getting pushing towards the Gulf, he knows that there is an eclipse that night of the fourth moon of Jupiter. And Wills, with the instruments that he was carrying with him, you know, in the middle of the night, observes this fourth moon of Jupiter disappearing behind Jupiter itself, so we can see the winking moon. And at the instant, you know, he checks his time, so he knows from his nautical almanac, as the astronomers do, exactly what time that was going to happen. And from that, he's able to set his own chronometers. Well, this is the time, work out latitudes and longitudes. But my point is, that was the level of scientific sophistication that Wills was travelling with. He was the scientist of the lot. And we're getting well off Antarctica. But anyway,
I think I love the way that you have sort of brought a certain popularity to history, Peter. You know, there are great historians of Australian legend, but I don't imagine you count yourself as one of them, because you take a different tack. Or do
you? Well,
look,
what I say is sometimes when I storm the historians club, metaphorically, they hold their nose and say, who let the footballer in?
Yeah.
And to which I say, gentlemen, ladies, calm, please. I'm not claiming to be one of you. I'm in it for the story. But because I'm in it for the story, I make damn sure that I've got my story correct, and that, you know, I back up my stories with 2,000 footnotes. I mean, the footnotes for Burke and Wills, I've got 2,211 footnotes as we speak, saying this is where this story came from. And when I did the book on Ned Kelly, I got the best review of my life. A fellow down in The Age wrote this review, and he said this book has more emotional resonance than Peter Carey's book on the Kelly Gang, which won the Booker Prize.
Hmm.
He said, however, with one major caveat, and that is that Timon's rights makes it up. That's not quite the words, but it was along those lines. And he used an anecdote that I had recounted, which is at the Battle of Stringy Bark Creek, the massacre at Stringy Bark Creek, where Ned Kelly breaks from deep cover, rushes towards two policemen, says, throw your hands in the air, put your weapons down. And one of them does exactly that. The other one, Constable Lonergan, goes for his gun. Ned Kelly, from about 40 yards away, fires at this man and hits him in the eye and kills him. And goes over, looks down upon him, and he realises that the man he's killed is Constable Lonergan, who 5 years earlier, in a fight with Ned and four other policemen, Constable Lonergan had grabbed him by the testicles and held on, and the only way it was to do it. And in my account, I said, well, Ned Kelly, you know, looks down upon this guy and realises this is the guy that's gripped him by the testicles 5 years earlier, for which he's had pain every day for the last 5 years, and now realises, that's funny, my balls don't hurt anymore. Anyway, the guy that was doing the review said, fabulous story. I felt like I was right there. Sadly, there's no proof whatsoever for that happened, which I wrote to him and said, actually, if you go to the 8th of August, 1982, the Argus, top page 5, top right-hand corner, you will find Ned Kelly's second last interview, where he talked about, you know, this man grabbed me in the most cruel and disgusting manner, and this man had given me pain every day for my life up to that date, blah, blah, blah. The point being, but what I try to do with my history stuff is to bring the story to life, but to back it up by original documentation.
Fantastic. Well, Peter, I guess the people who accompany you on the Frozen Frontier, which is part of a Chimu Adventures cruise to the Antarctic, can look forward to this these moments of raconteur.
Oh, yeah. Well, look, the thing, I mean, I can talk about Scott of the Antarctic till my nose fell off. I mean, the story of Scott of the Antarctic and Amundsen, the race to the South Pole,
yeah,
is one of the best yarns there's ever been. But the man that I love... it's not Douglas Mawson. It's not Amundsen. It's not. It's not Scott of the Antarctic. It is Ernest Shackleton.
Right.
Now there goes a man. He was the best explorer of the lot by a country mile, and you know was famous for basically never losing a passenger.
Fantastic. Well, Peter, we'll put up on our SoundCloud site the contact details for Chimu Adventures for people who are interested. But this is an 11-day. Excursion on a terrific vessel, you'll be there in glorious living colour.
I will be. Vote for me. I'm 6'3". Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Not short of a thought, is he?
No, he isn't, and you did well to keep up. Graham Kemlow there, speaking with author and journalist Peter Fitzsimons.
You're listening to The Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.